Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume, improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table. Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume. Improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Hello, food fam. This is the Walk and Talk podcast, your favorite food podcast, and I'm your host, Carl Fiadini. Welcome to the show. We're podcasting on site at Ibis Images Studios, where food photography comes alive and I get to eat it. First things first, the Farmer's Craveable Dinners series first event was a big smash, and man, it was great. Big thanks to Marvin at Cahaba Club, Peninsula Food Service, Sweetwater Organic Coffee, and Noble Citrus for being top shelf event sponsors. Love you guys. A special thanks to Yee Farms, Happy Tales Farms, Warden Farms, Evans Farms, Ohana Fish, Honey Couple, Life Farm, and Jersey Acres. Love you guys. Thank you for participating. There is more to come. My goodness. Chef Jefferson hit a homer. Evan and Jess were like rock stars, and we're going to get more into the event a little bit later, but I kind of wanted to get that out of the way. Big thanks to a badass, successful evening. Yes. So on the menu today, and thank you, Peninsula Food Service, for supplying the proteins for this produzione. Our food choice this week, it's all about old school yummy dishes that we've decided to resurrect and modernize. Also, this week's guest, we have the Kylie Harper Larson. I mean, she is a food safety specialist extraordinaire, expert, and an all around amazing human being. We're talking farm production and important and how important water is in food safety at large. Side note, at the dinner, she totally bailed me out. So cool. Kylie's on deck. Jeff, pop the clutch, baby. Let's roll. What do we got?
Yeah, well, I got the call from you, and it was just, let's do something different. Throwback from the Sizzler days. And, you know, Sizzler back in the day was just like basically steak grilled and some maybe shrimp and lobster maybe. So I wanted to go deep into the classics and I popped some stuff out there. One of the ones I did was the bistecca alla romana, which was a dish that we did at Brio when I was there. And it was like the tender, like tips, pound those out, and we put them in between Roma tomatoes that had breadcrumbs. So I wanted to switch it up since we had our guests coming on today. So I wanted to do some fried green tomatoes and pimento cheese. Did that differently. Then we did bacon wrapped, which we unwrapped it because, man, there was a lot more bacon when you unwrap it. It's like five pieces of bacon, a little of asparagus on the bottom, grilled asparagus for the side accoutrement. Then we had two New York strips that we did. We did a beef bourguignon, which is known as a peasant dish back in the day. And usually it's usually chuck steak or like a really awful cut, and they braise the living daylights out of it in a stew. I wanted to do something different. So I did that with the, you know, seared. And then the last one we did was the New York strip. How do we do that one? I'm having a brain cramp on that one. It was fantastic. What was your favorite?
All of them. Yeah. No, I mean, the pizziola was pretty.
That's the one, yeah. The pizziola.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty partial to that, you know, kind of thing.
Well, back in the day when I worked for Pastanosh and Casabella, that was the dish we made. Teddy Andreozzi, which was the nephew of Teddy Falco, who owned it.
You got to say Teddy Andreozzi.
Teddy Andreozzi. Yeah, you got to do this.
Yeah.
Teddy used to do it. We had the peppers and tomatoes and onions, almost like doing a Chaucer sauce back from the day. But then we put fresh mozzarella on. So you had that stretchability and the thing would stretch out. But we used buffalo mozzarella when we did it. So I wanted to pay a little bit in respect to one of my mentors. Great guy. Anyhow, it was a fun day.
Well, just to kind of recap this. Last week, I was talking to Jeff and John. And I said, hey, you know, it would be great if we can like take a Sizzler dish or a Bennigan's or, you know, something like that, you know, Ponderosa, whatever. Like, this is one of these old school brands, and take a dish that was popular and let's resurrect it. Let's make it happen. Let's rebuild, you know, something like that. And as it turns out, and Jeff will explain, it was easier to find dishes, traditional old school dishes, and do that. Jeffrey, go.
So like, for instance, Salisbury steak was a great one. Mm-hmm. The problem is the cut of meat. So if we want to do Salisbury steak, that's more ground beef, but I wanted to do whole muscle. So that's why I kind of switched that way. Remember smother steaks?
Yeah.
I love those too. So I wanted to do that. I was even thinking chicken fried, you know, steak, which is, I got the shake from the both sides of me. Both people are raising the roof on that one. The ones I also thought about, and you and I talked about, and we need to do that, is the Monte Cristo.
Monte Cristo. Yeah, dude. I mean, we have to do that after I go to the to a doctor's appointment. I just need to make sure I'm good for that. I got to get through it.
Okay? We have to set up John's new toy from his Christmas batch. Remember that he got, he's looking at me.
And I'm looking at him. What are you talking about? Which one?
Remember the one that he hid from everyone when he was at that Christmas thing where he wanted to make sure he got it to go home? Called a fryer.
Oh, yeah, the fryer. Okay.
Because
we need
that to actually fry the Monte Cristo.
See, when you're talking, I automatically go to, you know, things that are beyond, you know, beyond a PG-13, 17 sort of
thing. I know that's usually my repertoire or what I'm known for. Right,
yeah,
right.
Bag O' Tricks is something. What could that have been? You know? No. But no, it was the fryer. Yeah, excellent.
Yeah. Yes. And imagine it with like smoked ham, smoked pork butt, and then fry it. Yeah, we need to do that tomorrow.
So it has to be, I'm stuttering over here. So we have to do this and make it like legit, you know, hashtag Bennigan's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, all of it.
He just talked.
The raspberry. Did he say something?
Yes.
I don't get it. I don't believe it.
On the intro, by the way, he talked.
Yeah, that's true too. By the way, today, and I just want to throw this out there and wherever it lands, we were talking steak-em. Right?
Yeah, we mentioned the old steakums.
Yeah, and then you said,
man, we should get some shaved roast beef up in here and do a really nice fat butt sandwich.
Yeah, so, you know, stay tuned for that. You know, like, all right, Jeff, man, you did it again. So, so these dishes, your favorite was which one? Because I want, we need to start implementing in these, you know, opening monologues. Or, you know, first segment is, more into the recipe part, you know, like where did it come from? Why did you do it? What was different? Hey, because we modernized it, right? Mm-hmm. Why? What was the,
Well, I think plate presentations, I don't think there's nothing in food that we're doing that's different. I mean, unless you're getting into molecular gastronomy, which was Ferdinand Adrian and his brother, that's when things really got changed for food. But food's been food since food has been food.
Correct.
It's just plate presentations. It might be making it elevated is what we were actually looking at. I mean, even though like beef bourguignon, that's a prime example. I mean, we're taking a chut steak or a flank steak or even a brisket inside, inside or outside skirt steak, any of those like tough steaks that you're going to braise, that's what it was made for. So then I elevated it by using that beautiful New York strip from Creekstown from Peninsula. I think cut like butter. I don't know if it was choice or prime, but my God.
I didn't even need to chew it. So you put it in your mouth and it melts. It's like,
terrific. I mean, and especially, you know, even having that bacon love. I mean, I love bacon, but still, I think the steak pizzaiolo is where my heart was because of Teddy Andreozzi and that whole thing with Casabella.
You know, my heart was there too. Okay. You know, hats off. My heart was there too. But I'll tell you what, I did enjoy the bacon, you know, slapping up the bacon and all of that. Yeah, it was, it smiles. That's what it is. It's just making smiles. That's what we do here at the Walk and Talk podcast.
It's just like being at the Farmer's Craveable Dinner. I mean, we made lots of memories for 9 courses. And
let me tell everybody. So
still trying to recover.
I'm from the industry, right? But it's the industry for me was 30 years ago, like a long time ago. And this was a nerve wracker. Because, like, all right, who's coming? Who's going to show up? This food? Who's making food? Who's serving this food? Because I don't, you know. It really all came together in the end. And, you know, Jeff, you prepped for like a week, 5 days, whatever, you know, ahead of time. This thing was executed so smoothly. Hats off to you. You did a fantastic job.
It wasn't me. I mean,
Jess and Evan were rock stars.
They were the execution part of it. Yeah.
But you were the field general. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, man, you put it out there and it executed perfectly.
Yeah. And it's funny because last night I ended up going, what I'm going to do for dinner. I was bouncing ideas in my head and I'm like, I got to have the foghorn leghorn. I didn't taste it. And all I heard about.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Was that damn foghorn leghorn. And so just so everyone knows, I smoked chicken. Just chicken. Just think about this for a second. Smoked chicken. It's not nothing hoopla. Nobody's shooting off guns because this is the best thing ever. And then I had the ají verde. We had chicken pate that was caramelized onions. And then I separated off the skin to do a crispy skin chicken. So it was like bacon, basically. As my shoulder is getting brushed off. Everyone in that first, because we had the tasty cam, so we did in threes. So that first tasty cam, everyone was like, oh, that foghorn leghorn. And then I heard it. And then I posted. And then Chef Jason was like, I'm still thinking about it. Now I know why.
Yeah. I mean, if that was the top, you know, dish.
The shumai was also.
Yeah, they were all great. I'm saying, but listen.
That's because you ate that for dinner.
Did he say something else?
He said brisket.
So, yeah, brisket was great. It really was fantastic. And so maybe what we do is we take the brisket and the chicken dish, recreate them so we can shoot them, and John can photograph them, and then people can see. So, by the way, not Evan, you know, nephew Evan, who was in the kitchen helping, but videographer Evan, who's new on the team. He's doing, you know, he did all the filming and we're waiting on the finished product and I can't wait to see it.
I can't wait to see the tasty cam when I got introduced to him.
The tasty cam is going to be great. There was like 30 people who did this tasty cam and, you know, just after a few stiff cocktails, you know, so it's going to be really great. And I was there for most of them. So I know that there's some real good content, in that tasty cam. And by the way, the tasty cam, just so everybody understands, we had a tent pavilion.
Gorgeous.
Gorgeous tent pavilion that had the couch, nice couches, and, you know, that's where the cocktails were and everything. In there, we set up a really nice cushy chair with the lights and the camera and, you know, the video camera, the whole nine yards. And that's where you would sit. So you're, you know, for the minute, 30 seconds, whatever, you're a superstar. You know, you're out there and it's all about you and how was your experience at this dinner. And you know what? Everybody really came with it. Like, there's humor. There was all sorts of really just sharing great, you know, the great vibe, the energy of the show. Anyway, it's going to be great. I can't wait to get that out there on socials. Hopefully into this coming week or so, that'll be out. And hey, next time, people, you got to get, you got to come out. You got to get your tickets. Unless you're invited, you know, and that's a special thing. We'll see how that works out. All right. So without further ado, because you know what? I mentioned it in the monologue. Kylie bailed me out big time the entire evening, right? Because what, I've never done one of these shows before and I don't know what to say. And, you know, I mean, I talk a lot, I've talked in front of people, but you know, whatever. Kylie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for like everything. She was in my ear. And what I mean by bail me out is I've got 30 people. There's these courses. We got Tasty Cam. There was a lot of actual,
stuff to do,
organization and workflow. And I'm getting through it. It's cool. But what happened is in my ear, out of nowhere, was, hey, say this, that, bah, 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 bah. And she gives me this like advice. And I turn and I'm like, oh my God, I love you. you really arrived at the most perfect. You are wonderful. Thank you. Anyway, quick intro. Who are you?
Well, I was born in a mayonnaise farm in South Mississippi. No, I'm originally from North Alabama, a little town called Dutton. I arrived 18 years ago in Palm Beach County in the Everglades agricultural area and haven't left. My husband and I own and operate a boutique banana, plantain, avocado, and steer operation along the shores of Lake O. And we pay for our farming habit by consulting for farmers, predominantly in the produce industry, to help them stay legal and get marketing business through retailers, distributors, and consumers by building their brands. So I handle them, and I just handled you in the same way.
And you did. I literally out of nowhere, it was like an angel. You were an angel, and you showed up, and you led me. And you said something to me on the phone the other day, right? That was you. Because I think Amy said something to you like, hey, you know, did he even know that he was being handled? Right. What was that?
Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture raised, all natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Yeah, she was like, I don't know if he knew. And I was like, I think he did, but it was more fun than what I normally experience. And she looked at me and said, why was that? I said, well, I think I knew I was going to get fed.
That's how I get down here all the time. You think I would hang out with these two yo-yos without the food? Come on. I don't know about that.
Well, you know, we keep on talking about Amy mentioning that we have three other angels that were helping us out that night.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We got to give a huge shout. Tina Atkins, actually four. Larry,
yep.
Came out. He was the roaster for Sweetwater as well. They set up the coffee station. You got Amy who did, and Vicky that came up with the whole event and made it look so shabby chic.
Yeah. That whole group. You know,
without
Kylie,
them, yeah.
Kylie included,
yeah.
Set the whole place up. It was really pretty. Like, you know, I think there's already pictures out of of the event.
A lot of the social influencers definitely put that out. The first thing, Tampa Food Mom,
yes.
Tampa Food Babes. They all pumped out some really good stuff.
Yeah, but I did just to finish on one point here. I knew what that was. I knew you were handling me, and I went with open arms. You know, I was just like, yes, I follow. I'm going to follow in line, lockstep, barrel, whatever. And that's what I did.
What time did we finish? Remember?
I got home at 2 a.m.
So it was about 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
It was about 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So some of us were there from
six in the morning.
Yeah.
Well, you guys were there.
You stayed there.
You stayed there, right?
Yeah. Which is really good because you can talk to the aspect of the agriculture that Airbnb that Marvin has over at Cahaba.
Yeah, it was a work.
It's gorgeous. Work trip.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, speaking of Marvin and Cahaba Club Herbal Outpost, it's a microgreens farm, right? But he put up, he just built, I don't know, 4 or 5, cabins, like state of the art, beautiful cabins. And then another, 3 or 4 off, two off grid cabins that are, you know, still really awesome, just like off grid. So it's a different experience.
So I have to call this out because something happened when I was at the farm the day before when I went out there.
It always does, right?
Right. Yeah. It was so much cloud cover that they forgot to put when it gets down a certain percentage that would shut everything down so we'd drain the batteries completely.
Oh, sure.
So he's now has a backup plan just in case, God forbid, the batteries don't get charged. So he put them on the grid just in case. And then he also put in a propane gas heater for water heater. Because that was another big thing, too.
Yeah, because I think I heard one of the girls there didn't have cold showers.
I heard there was like, four people and they were taking an hour long shower.
Oof. Well, that would have been me.
Being at the farm that long.
Somebody looks guilty.
I did hear that from Marlene.
I will just say that I experienced pristine hot water for about 80% of my shower. And then as I have my facial scrub on my face because I had worn makeup to this event, which might I add to you, my grandmother always says you should only wear makeup to events. So you were
right. Event.
I get a glacial ice blast of water, which Marvin described to me as my trip to the spa for free. So Marvin, I love you. That was an incredible experience. And although it was after the event, I was wide awake.
Sure. What the funniest part about that is, and if you know Marvin, you know how he speaks and his cadence when he talks, right? So I can just picture like, oh man, that was just your trip to the spa. That's, like I can see it. It's beautiful.
All I heard was, I got a text at 1 o'clock in the morning. There was cold water. Well, don't take a shower that long.
Oh my goodness. All right. So let's jump into this. It's an interesting topic, hot topic, right? Food safety and farms and the most, as I understand it, and tell me if I'm wrong, Kylie, the biggest area where, the flag area is water.
You are 100% correct. And it's just because it's an input that is used even before, if you're doing conventional growing, that's called land preparation, water has to be a factor in the preparation of the site. And then if you're growing hydroponically, it's your main input there, or you're growing with aquaponics as well. And then water is used in a multitude of additional ways throughout the process, all the way into harvesting, sanitation, and continuing on to when it goes to facilities for cooling, for packing, and even for processing. And let's not forget about the almighty hand wash water as well.
So how is it... So explain the process of why our food, for the most part, in the United States, Florida here in particular, is safe.
That's a pretty heavy question.
I know it
right
is.
There. Definitely wet, no pun intended. Water, in particular, in growing in Florida, is we have an abundance of water. And so we can use water by growing. We use water through crop protection, which is a way of saying, how do we help the plants grow through fertilizer, through protecting from pests and diseases? We can also use water in particular for irrigation purposes. And with irrigation purposes, it's different means. Different areas of Florida grow in different ways. So down in South Florida, we have a lot of canals and rivers and open water sources. We have access to that water through permits. Usually water management districts give us access to that. And we can use that water, but it's open to the elements. And then we have water that comes from wells, which many people have at their homes, but also farms and farm-owned facilities have access to water. And then surprisingly, many people don't realize that sometimes farms actually use city or county water to grow, to irrigate, to even pack and cool their products. So that water can be used in all of these different ways, but the different types of water have their own individual risk.
So how do, and with those risks, what are the fixes or corrective measures? Obviously, water's a, it happens. Water happens, you know, you can have rain that comes through. It changes the pH or, you know, there's all sorts of things that can happen in real time. How do you stay on top of it to where it stays at its right levels?
So very good question. So when we're talking about right levels, you're probably talking about open water source water. And so that's through management plans. And it typically starts with strategy. Just like any other business, farmers have to have strategy and they have to start with risk assessments for those open water sources. And they have permits of when they can raise and lower the water. Many times what they want to be able to do is actually keep all of that water on that individual farm because it takes a lot of time, effort, and money to pump water in. And we're very cautious about pumping water out because we want to be able to make sure that we're effectively using those resources that we have. So we want to look at keeping levels stable for what we're growing. But when rain happens, like we've been getting tremendous amounts of rain, we have to lower those water channels. And usually we use the ditches that are already cut in the farms. And many times there's also large reservoirs that the farmers have access to where they can put that water and store it. And then when they need it, they actually don't have to draw it in from major canals. They actually still keep it right there on their farm.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table.
And that's what, in what sort, how is it contained? What is that?
So it's typically contained within the canal banks, the ditch banks, and the reservoir containment areas. That's normally where it's stored at. It doesn't go into any type of cistern or water tank, typically like what you would see in California or Arizona. We actually store it in another open source. You would be amazed at the amount of what is called acre feet of volume of water that can be stored when you have, say, a 2 foot wide ditch that is 2 feet in depth, but it goes for 40 acres. Well, if there are ditches that are on either side of those 40 acres and there's 10 40 acre fields, that's a lot of water that can be stored and effectively used. And it actually is called seepage irrigation. And it's one of the most genius ways of making sure that our water that is going to be used for irrigation purposes is actually safe, because it infiltrates in through the soil into the root system, and it keeps the soil moist, keeping the plants growing. And they can raise and lower that water by moving what's called boards in culverts. And that's a pretty cool thing to do.
Now, does that keep, you know, any sort of, because it's going through the root system in the soil, and it's almost like a filter, I would imagine. So does that clean out pathogens and things? Is that a natural sort of a...
Where can they introduce pathogens too? Because
right.
What is the perfect medium for that?
Yes. So it kind of goes hand in hand. Anytime you have moisture and you have water, it's a conduit, right? It's the perfect vehicle for a pathogen like an E. coli or a salmonella or a listeria, which you guys hear these buzzwords and recalls that happen all of the time. But when the water goes through that natural filtration system, many times people also forget the solarization that happens from the sun that goes down through the water column, and that UV, ultraviolet radiation, actually kills bacteria, pathogens, parasites that could be residing in there. And then when it soaks up through the roots, okay, it tends not to translocate pathogens, which is awesome. So that's one of the main reasons why we've got all of this volume of water available for farmers that use conventional land preparation, even organics, and they can use seepage irrigation. When we actually take those water samples for farmers that use seepage irrigation, we check the main canal feeding in, but when we take the samples for that particular field, we actually take it from the middle of the field and we let the water draw up to 100 milliliters because that shows what is actually touching the roots.
So is there a percentage? So you have your water system on, you know, random farm, A, B, C, whatever. And you go, you do your tests, you take your samples. Is there a curve on that? It's like, okay, well, your water's coming back, and I don't know the rate or whatever, but it's coming at 98%. You know, so you have this 2% variance where there could be something there or something to that effect. How does that actually work?
So it's not in percentages. We deal in actual numbers or what's called most probable numbers, or for those sciencey folks, it's called colony forming units. This goes all the way back to biology and chemistry. But we look at different testing methods, predominantly for legally required generic E. coli. That's considered to be what's called an indicator organism. It indicates if there could be additional pathogen disturbances that are there, but also we look for specific numbers. And depending upon the commodities that are grown that way, you may have a very, very low number because of the way that the water could be used. Maybe it's not being used for seepage irrigation, but we look for less than, typically the number is less than 126, most probable number, or colony forming unit. And you might say, where the heck does that number come from? Well, it actually is based on science from the EPA and the drinking water standard and going back into what is actually considered to be safe for use from the 1970s with the EPA. So this is what the FDA adopted for what we are now legally required to mandate for testing.
So that's interesting. So, but if you have a 1,000 gallon area of water, right? Mm-hmm. And you go to, you know, the center. But so if you're testing for like E. coli, let's say, or Listeria or one of the, it's not going to be riddled throughout how do you know for sure you're catching the right sample, right? Does that make sense?
Multiple points, or is it one point, a critical point, or is it multiple critical points?
Really good question there. So we start with where we intake the water. Okay. So I said the main canal earlier, and then we look at which commodities and where is the last point of use for that, which would be, if the last point is seepage irrigation, it would be the root uptake, and the weakest area for root uptake would be the center of the field. Okay. And so we would go into that field, and what we do is prior to planting, at least 30 days ahead, we take a sample for the main canal leading in, and then during production, we do it every 30 days minimum. Now, sometimes there are retail clients where crops are being grown specifically for them, and they may want additional water testing, and they may also want water testing for what is used directly on the crop. So if we've been dealing with kind of interesting temperatures, especially in North Florida, and, you know, we're about to go into berry season, strawberry and blueberry season, And many times they're doing that with freeze control and freeze prevention. That water is typically not coming from open water sources. It's coming from wells that typically are absent of generic E. coli or absent of total coliforms. And because it's going to touch the edible portion of the crop or the edible leaves or the bulbs that are going to form into fruit. And that just all goes into risk and understanding all of the different ways that we would use water and then making sure that we're making the best efforts there. So it's really an in-depth question because we do sample in multiple points, but we also repeat that sampling to make sure that throughout the entire growing process, all the way up to harvesting, and even if something is being replanted, even if it's a different commodity after, that continues throughout the season so that we develop what we call geometric means so that we know what to expect from that main canal, what to expect from certain fields as well. And we know if it shifts too much that we need to inspect and investigate further so that we can try to reduce any likelihood of a recall.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
So let's just say E. coli is a big one, right? And is it more likely an E. coli breakout is going to happen because of water contamination? Or is that going to be from you know,
human
or animal contaminant, right? So yeah, touch on that a little bit.
So we've seen in previous recalls that mostly we've been lucky here in Florida that we haven't had any water-associated recalls that have happened in note for produce, but they have been water-associated recalls for certain types of E. coli out west in Arizona and in California with some leafy greens. And it was relating to how they were storing the water, how they were using the water. And what's interesting about that in particular is that those recalls, we've learned more from them now so that the entire produce community is putting practices in place so that we can prevent, eliminate, and reduce the chances. Because we look back on history and we say, how can we dissect this particular problem? And how do we make sure that it's not going to happen again? So for instance, what's happening in Arizona right now is the state government is allowing treatment of water on farm water. So they bring the water in and they are treating it with certain approved compounds for organic. Some are organic compounds, peroxyacetic and periacetic acid, that will reduce the likelihood of the pathogens down. But they're doing it based on testing to know that it's there. The thing to know about any open water source is that if it's open to you, it's open to all wildlife, it's open to all humans as well, and it's going to contain bacteria, okay? But what is a safe amount? Is that 126 truly safe to you or not? What we want to try to do is lower that amount to a level where hopefully it's undetectable.
I mean, you can get bacteria from the water from your house taking a shower. I mean, you know, you have your eye doctor will tell you, hey, don't rub your eyes in the shower and all the water. What are you talking about? Like, how do you shower, pal? Like, what do you, you know, it gets in there, right?
Well, there was specifically, when I think it was either Texas or Arizona, there was a feedlot that was near where they were growing greens.
Yeah.
Hello. And so what they were doing to minimize the risk of the pathogens from being airborne when the cows would go to the bathroom, defecate, they would water it. That's brilliant. Where do you think that water went? To the farm.
Well, runoff is a whole nother, system, right?
Yes. And so what he's talking about is called a bioaerosol. And we actually, in our risk assessments now for almost all commodities that are consumed without cooking, we actually have to look at the proximity to livestock, to contained animal feeding operations, to even hobby farms, to make sure that the bioaerosols are not going to be a potential hazard. And if they are, then we have to look at the slope of the land, the connections of the water, canals, ditches, ponds, and we have to actually be very, very, very cautious with our groundwater, because that's what happens. Why are your eye doctors telling you not to wash your eyes with a well water system is if you've got groundwater potential contaminants, and anyone in the United States might, you would actually have that potential hazard if you weren't monitoring, which I have to say, many homeowners are not actually managing their well systems as they should. So as a food safety professional, I would encourage you to hire that out.
I mean, look, I'm still trying to like get through homework with my my children, right?
Well, and that's the biggest thing. Like what she was just saying, it's like I'm looking around and I'm smirking. It's like the aha moment. Like, why were we not doing this in the first place?
Right.
We all know that, you know, when there's defecation, you don't want to have it near you. So that's why we have toilets in the house.
I mean, I've been living my life like that as far back as I can remember.
Do farms have, well, I hate this word because it's in the restaurant industry, it's one of those things we can't stand, HACCP.
Yes.
So.
Yes. And we are acronym city now in food safety. Okay. We have HACCP. We have PCQI. We have VACCP. We have TACCP. We have GMO. We have GAP. We have GHP. You want me to keep going?
No, it's all right. I stopped at HACCP.
So HACCP is throughout the food industry, but predominantly in produce. HACCP is applied on the facility level, and it's a methodology that actually started with NASA. Dun, dun, dun. And why? Because nobody wants diarrhea in space. Okay. I mean, what?
True story.
What exactly would you do with diarrhea in space?
I have a problem.
Okay. Yeah.
You're calling Houston.
Yeah. Houston.
Right.
And then Houston's going to be like, I don't know. So with HACCP in particular, HACCP is super cool because they wanted to do what they could to keep astronauts safe in space. Well, they looked at inputs. Well, we've just been talking about a major input in agriculture, which is water. Okay. And how do we employ this NASA rocket science, which HACCP is rocket science. So that actually means you and I are rocket scientists. Okay. Fist bump on that one right there.
I don't know about that, but okay.
If we employ HACCP, we will have the opportunity to, and gentlemen, wait for this, to purr. Okay? That's right.
Right.
That means to prevent, eliminate, and reduce. And we look at hazards. And we can do that on the farm level. We don't have to wait for the facility level. And that's what we do with risk assessments. We look at biological hazards. So we've just been talking about E. coli and all of these pathogens, right? Pathogens mean that it doesn't have to be bacteria. It can be viruses. It can be parasites, which make me shiver. Okay. And then we look at chemical hazards. So we're not just talking about pesticides here. We're not talking about fertilizers. We're talking about what happens on the land level and what has been previously happening on the history of that land. Or maybe what has happened if we're growing in a greenhouse with the media, like coconut coir or peat moss, and where it was sourced from. And oh yeah, it was wet and it came from Canada, or it came from another location. And what do we know about that? And then physical hazards. You know, in the kitchen, he has to look at his knives constantly to make sure that he doesn't have any metal hazards coming off. Well, guess what? We have to do that as well. Most of your produce items, unless they're handpicked, are harvested by what? A knife or a set of scissors. And so that's a physical hazard. But we have to look at this particular HACCP methodology, but we apply it on the farm level. And so if you really want to think about it, your farmers are rocket scientists. And that's pretty cool.
Well, and that's why we always say in the restaurant business that you want to go to a reputable place, because here's the thing, God forbid, you know, an outbreak considered in the health industry, as far as the Department of Health, it's like two people. That's all you need.
Two people.
Yeah. And when you have a HACCP plan, even in your restaurant, it points back to farm zero point, you know, or a farm. They go back to that farm. And if that farm has the HACCP, they can know exactly, like the perfect example is Chipotle. How many times have they been hit by E. coli? And it was mostly the greens, and they knew exactly what farm and exactly what person that caused it.
Yeah. The field, the farm hand. And, you know, it's all about critical control points. And a critical control point is in the timeline of handling that product where something is likely to go wrong. You know, a glass break could happen here. That's a critical control point. Or, you know, there could be a contaminant, you know, could occur here in the timeline of, you know, boxing or
also the food chain when it goes on the truck.
And it's then the whole thing. Yeah. Chain. I mean, yeah. HACCP programs apply to, you know, farms, it applies to restaurants, it applies to the distributor who's, the truck drivers, like everybody has, you know, their part, their system, their place in this HACCP program. And then that is how you can go back and find where the error is, you know. And, you know, being in produce myself and from the distribution sector, it's always nice when it's not from our facility, you know. It's like, okay, we check everything we have to check off. And then we go, hey, farmer or grower, packer, shipper. Yeah, it's on you guys. You know, you guys. And now it's their problem to go and do their checks and see where the thing actually, you know, where the occurrence came from.
And when you talk about critical control points, the important distinction is you can have something that's a control point, like temperature in particular.
Yeah.
But there becomes a certain type of temperature hazard where something is introduced or enhanced. And that's what separates something from just being a control point of what we would call for quality, right? Nobody wants something like a lukewarm iceberg head of lettuce, okay? But it still might be safe, okay? But from a quality standpoint, no, we want it to be crisp and we want it to be solid and we want it to be juicy in the instance that we have something that flips the switch. And in that temperature, if there was a pathogen that when it got to a certain temperature, it enhanced the potential, then that would be a critical control point. And so we look at that more so on the facility level than the farm level.
See, but all of these things have to be documented in the most meticulous, outrageous way possible. And we all hate putting these plans together.
I'm rolling my eyes.
Seriously. I mean, I've been part of HACCP teams and whatnot in my career. It's awful. But it's for the best. It's for the greater good of all of this.
You know, when I do consulting on restaurants, one of the things I always ask is how many times a day you're doing your temperature checks. And they're like, what temperature checks? I'm like, how are you not doing temperature checks? And here's the reason why. God forbid somebody gets sick in your establishment. If you're doing temperature checks, then you've already have that, you know, has that problem. You've already indicated the solution. Guess who the health inspector is not going to go after? You.
Right.
If you don't, that opens up a whole nother can of worms.
See, and then you defer back to your distributor.
Right.
You know, because your distributor, in those cases, they're in charge of the logistics as well. So, you know, transportation. So that company, you know, handles the product from, you know, from
point A to point from, to your back door.
Uh-huh. Exactly. So then the checks have to start going backwards from there. So it's, you know, it's actually, it's an interesting part of how people get their
food. It's a necessary evil.
Necessary evil, but it's interesting if you really get into it. You know, on the surface, you might say, oh, hey, we're talking food safety, and you want to, you know, dig your eyes out. But no, the reality is, this is, it's, no.
It's true.
It's true. Because it's
exciting.
It's exciting. It's so much work. So that work, you might look at it and go, oh my God, I don't want to have anything to do with that. But the truth is, it we get to go and enjoy all of the things that we do with food because we take it for granted that it's going to be okay.
Yeah, we take the worry out of it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. From farmers all the way through harvesters and packers, through the distributors, not just that they have laws, but they actually feel a responsibility. I've been in the food industry now nearly 20 years, and I haven't met one person who doesn't take a level of esteemed pride when they see their product on a plate or being listed in a menu, and they want to make sure that that consumer is not just getting something tasty, but something that is safe and something that they will order time and time and time again. And so that pride is really what facilitates the compliance. It's not regulatory action. It's not hearing somebody down the street. There's recalls that just happened announced this morning. Okay. They're happening all
restaurants
the time.
Closing.
Yes.
Because of it. Some big restaurants in Tampa. I don't know if you've seen those articles. I didn't pass them off to you. There's some,
no, I didn't see it today.
Yeah. There were some pizza places recently that closed. There was actually a main player. I'm trying to think who it was that was closed down for 2 days, had multiple. Yeah. So again, you know, we have these because of poop happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at Jack in the Box is a prime example. And this is something that I didn't realize. We didn't know about E. coli until Jack in the Box. We didn't know that it could be killed after 140 degrees. Once that set the precedent, that's one of the reasons why Jack in the Box was able to rebound from it, because they actually put in, they, you know, the letters were going back and forth with inside that corporation about what was going on. It was the government, the FDA and the EPA that said, hey, you need to kill this. And the way to do that is 140 degrees. And that became the mainstay after that. That's why you have the produce that she was talking about so much earlier. That's why we have so many problems with the ready to eat RTE mm-hmm. problems, because that stuff's not being, we don't know if it's being cleaned properly. And that's some of the farmers that are maybe cutting some corners or whatever.
It or happens. They just don't know. And that's
it. Sounds like she knows.
She does, right? So, by the way, two things real quick. So, in terms of water, because I know there's more to this, but for today's segment, I want to kind of wrap up on the water. What's the most prevalent water bacteria or, you know, potential challenge?
So E. coli, because it's the indicator organism, and what we have seen from research is that in most water systems, whether they're open or well or even municipal, that it's going to indicate presence of not just other types of E. coli, certain ones that we may naturally have in our gut that don't make us sick but may make others sick, but what we also see in open water is that salmonella tends to harbor with E. coli. And so the E. coli test is actually a lot cheaper and quicker for the lab to turn around. So if you've got a certain level of E. coli, you can say, hey, here's what I need to do in my plan that's already written, that's already founded in science, of to lower the potential, and we may retest, we may do additional solarization techniques. Don't think that we're always going to use chemical treatment, okay? That is always the last option.
So the consumer at home, it's one thing, we're talking restaurants, that's one thing. At home, the best method that, you know, Jane and Joe, you know, family can do is to wash their product.
Yes, and let's also say, wash your hands often.
Oh my God, yeah. Wash your hands, people.
Please, 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 please have a cutting board that can be cleaned and sanitized, that is only used for produce. And we don't use the same one for fish, and we don't use the same fish one for meat. You need to have separate ones. That is how you reduce the likelihood of cross-contamination.
John only has one cutting board after the little face he just did. I know. I have color coded, and just make it easier. You know, green, red, blue, white, and gray, I think, is the one.
Yes, and you can find that at any retail establishment, and normally they have handy-dandy icons, so if you forget what the blue one stands for,
fish.
It is fish.
All right, so here's the next step of this, right? Farmers, if you're listening, or distributors, or restaurants, or whomever, if you're in the industry, and you're like, oh man, I should probably have a consultant come in and really check this out. Kylie, how do people find you?
Well, thank you for asking. The consulting business is called the Ag Safety Lady, and we are a firm, so it's not just a army of one. I've got folks throughout Florida and a couple of other places, and we're multilingual. They can visit theagsafetylady.com, or they can find us on Facebook. As well, because we're active there, or they can give me a call by calling 561-261-9747. We'll set it up and we'll work with you no matter what your problem is, or even if you don't think you have a problem.
I often think I don't have any problems, but yeah, that's not true. So as we go forward with this, and we kind of talked about it, I'll put you on the spot a little bit on air, but I kind of want to do this as a series, right? So today we did water. Right. And I know
that water or
water. Not water. I don't know where you're from, because you're not from Hollywood with that.
No, my mom. I told you.
I mean, it doesn't make
any sense. My mom and dad are from Freeport and Long Island and Woodmere.
All right. So
that's why
we're going to fix you. We're going to fix you, man. I promise
you.
So you over here, Kylie.
What would be another good one to talk about?
So hold on. Wait a second. Time out. Because we're not going to dive into it now. Right.
I'm trying to throw it out there.
I'm trying to do a teaser.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
No, you want to get into the guts of it. What are we on?
I don't want to do the guts of it. I want to know what would be the topic.
We're 51 minutes into this thing. People are like now already starting to be like, okay, let's give that to them. You know, we're trying to improve the show and the workflow. And that means we got to control Jeff. I'm just putting it out there.
Impossible.
But we're starting with water. That's today. And we may circle back to water because I think water has much more to it. So this morning I received this whole batch of data points and information, and it's fascinating. I skimmed through it and there's so much more to water. What would be the next topic in terms of food safety and, you look nervous. What's the matter?
I am not nervous. I was anticipating this question, you know, like Miss America, you know, I was waiting my world peace answer. I get quizzed grocery store, even at the Farmer's Craveable dinner event, mm-hmm. which I volunteered at and purchased a ticket. And I was at the VIP table, super swag bag. Awesome. I will say that no one really knows, and I can dive deep into what does organic mean?
Oh my goodness,
yeah. And what does conventional mean? And what does the term pesticide-free mean? And how about GMO? And is organic GMO or is it not? And what's allowed? I mean,
do you know how many people's heads are exploding right now? Listening to this, if they got this far, if they didn't hang up on Jeff here, you know, like 2 minutes ago, people who are hearing this are excited. I'm telling you now, these are great topics. And now we have the pro, the expert in the field to explain it. You know, we're not relying on you or I or
I'm not
John to blanket with his, you know, whatever. But yes. So we're going to have you back. We'll figure out some scheduling and, you know, maybe what we'll do is we'll frame out some of these topics and we'll start feeding them on the social media and we'll gin up maybe some questions. We'll get, you know, get the audience involved in this a little bit. A poll.
Yeah. Whatever the topic is, take a poll and they can ask questions to her. That'd be great.
I think it'd be awesome.
Because it gets them interactive too.
Correct. How you feel good?
Ask the expert is what we can do. Like little corner.
Did you enjoy eating here today?
She was told not to eat.
I was told not to eat this morning. So yes, I definitely enjoyed
in anticipation of getting here.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Okay. Yes. Okay.
She was born not to eat because if she ate, she was not going to be able to eat.
But I already connected with Jeff on social media prior to Saturday's event, and I read the menu, and I said, you had me at crackling. And I told him that was his next shirt hashtag. So if I don't get fillets or New York strips, I just get honey cracklings and chicken cracklings and pork cracklings. I'll work for crackling.
That honey crackling.
Deal.
I should have brought some today. Sorry about that.
You
should have,
man. And, you know, we could have like bread crumb, crackling crumbs.
You know? Ooh, piece of candy.
Ooh, another one. All right. You know, listen, Kylie, thank you for being on the program today. I'm glad you got to experience, because we do the Craveable, Farmer's Craveable dinner every Thursday, basically. You saw what we do here, yes. Right? So we're getting those bites constantly.
Don't forget about the shots.
Now you're bringing the shots. Farmer yeah. to it every Thursday.
Yeah. This is what I'm saying. This is an expanding pie. This whole walk and talk podcast thing and this whole food universe, it's expanding, and we're bringing all kinds of folks in. And
expanding like your waist.
Yeah. Just totally like that. You're right. All right. Again, thanks for being on the show. John, I cannot wait. I can't wait to see some photography as soon as possible. Like mas rapido, as they say.
Wow.
Yeah. No, that's an inside joke. Jeff, and if you want to come back next week, you can.
All right.
All right. All right. We are out.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.